Welcome to Storybrooke.
Enjoy your stay.
Hi everyone, and welcome to Onceable, episode 77. Today we will be discussing season 5, episode 9 of Once Upon a Time, The Bear King. I'm Karen, and today I'm joined by Laura and Kristen. Hello, ladies.
Hello.
Hi.
And Brittany was supposed to be here, but she's having some issues hopping on Skype, so she might pop up later. We'll just have to wait and see, but hopefully she will be here to talk about this episode as well. So first up, let's, first of all, where you can reach us on Twitter, at Onceable, or this any post on Hypeable.com, either the recaps, news stories, or this one with the podcast. Please share your comments. We like reading them, and we will try to read out as many as we can on air. But first, instant reaction to this episode. What did you guys think? Laura, what about you?
I liked it. It was a thumbs up for me. I'm a big Ruby fan, so I was like, yay, like very, very happy.
Cool. Kristen?
Thumbs sideways. While I enjoyed the episode, it seems like a really strange to do a 2-hour block with it, especially with the end of the first hour. So I was a little let down, but I think it was mainly a letdown because we didn't get anything at related to like the first hour. So I'm gonna say sideways, but it was still a good episode.
I'm gonna say thumbs up, although I will agree with you. I feel like this kind of halted the main storyline and it was really weird, but aside from that, I thought it was a really solid episode. And of course, I really love Merida and Mulan and Red, so having all three of them kind of be in the spotlight for this episode was really exciting for me. Let's jump into favorite quotes. Laura, what about you?
My favorite quote was from Ruby, and it just made me really laugh, and it was, "I may not be the best person to ask for dating advice. I kind of ate the only boyfriend I ever had." So I thought that was hilarious. I kind of almost forgot about that until she said it. And I'm like, well, at least you can laugh about it now. And then the next thing that I remembered is they almost kind of quasi on one of her last appearances sort of intimated that her and Dr. Whale could have been starting a relationship. And I remember thinking at the time, no, don't do that. So yeah, I just kind of laugh because Ruby has not had the best of luck in the romance department.
Yeah, that's pretty true. I also like Mulan's follow-up, which was, yeah, that kind of disqualifies you. That was really good. Kristen, you had a Mulan quote.
Yes, it's not exactly funny, but I loved when she said, "Fighting isn't about who's stronger, it's about who's smarter." Because, especially on Once Upon a Time, it never comes down to the stronger guy wins. Like, it always comes down to someone has to outsmart the other. So it was just kind of nice to see her, you know, kind of give Merida the ground rules. Like, listen, I'm telling you right now, it doesn't matter how big these fools are. Like, you can take them. And that just, it's Mulan, and it's awesome.
Yeah, my favorite quote comes from kind of a strange place, not one of the main characters, but the witch, actually, because she tells Merida about her father. He never stooped except to get through the door, which is both hilarious, but also really nice that we never had to worry about him going down the wrong path. Not that I would have been totally against that, but it was nice to know that he wasn't and that the witch was a good witch. I was telling Kristen, like, that never happens. So it was cool to see that.
Yeah, I agree. That was actually really cool. I totally did not see like the good witch thing coming. Although I have to tell you, the whole time I was watching her, I just kept thinking about the witch character from The Princess Bride. Like, I kept feeling, I was like waiting for Billy Crystal to like pop up next to her and go, "Have fun storm in the castle," because her whole look was kind of very Princess Bridey.
See, for me, she's like the spitting image of the witch from Brave. Like, every time I looked at her, I was like, and it's creepy how much you look like the cartoon character. Like, it freaks me out. So, yeah.
Yeah, oh, the hair. The hair. They've got this thing with the hair down pat. It just, works every time. For the record, Brittany would like to say that she really disliked this episode. I would assume it's because there was not enough / no Hook and Emma. So she gives it a thumbs down. If she joins us, she can pitch her reasons. But until then, you'll have to hit her up on Twitter, I guess.
I'm sure she'll let you know.
Yes, I'm sure she has lots of opinions about that. Okay, so we spent most of the episode in Dunbrock, and it was, like we said, a change in pace, but also a fairly interesting storyline. So this kind of ended up being a bottle episode, but the first thing I want to talk about is the casting of Fergus and Eleanor, who are Meredith's parents. Because I know, Laura, you still haven't seen the movie, but Kristen, pretty good casting, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The only comment I remember, like, making was Eleanor looks like she's maybe, like, 5 or 6 years older than Merida. Like, if they would have cast just a slightly taller actress, I think it would have given the effect that they wanted, like, that she's her mother and older. But the actress was great. It seemed like they were closer in age than I think they are intended to be.
Yeah, she looked really young. Like, she looked like she could be Merida's contemporary, which was kind of throwing me off a little bit. But again, with the hair, they did a great job kind of replicating what we saw in the movie. And in terms of Fergus, like, oh, wow.
Fitting image. Yeah, yeah.
It's so crazy how well they can do this. And he had that same sort of powerful yet kind and gentle demeanor that he did in the movie, you know, willing to lead the army, but also willing to kind of take a moment to spend time with his daughter and appreciate her for the person she is. But Laura, without having seen the movie, what did you think of Meredith's parents?
I really liked them as far as actors go. I mean, like, obviously I couldn't tell you one way or another if they really looked like the people in the movie or not, but I really liked them as actors. The only thing that for me just is a little distracting in the whole thing is, again, still some of the hair issues, like the father's, like, gigantic, like, oh my God, you could have parked your car in that mustache. It was just so huge and so orange and so fake. I didn't really mind. It really kind of bugged me. And then the mom, like, her hair was okay. Like, that didn't really bother me or anything. Obviously, it was a wig, but that didn't bug me. It also, the only other person along the similar line that really bugged me was the little guy, and I think I mentioned this before, who had the stark white hair, and it's kind of all teased up and off to the side. Like,
yeah.
It doesn't even move in the wind or anything. It was like he was an anime character. So I get that they want, you know, people to kind of recognize, you know, who these people are. But I feel like you can make some adjustments. I mean, Snow doesn't look like Snow White all the time. Like, Belle doesn't look like Belle all the time. I think they could, I don't know. I still wish they just did it in a more subtle way, particularly if with Once Upon a Time, like, the possibility is so high for these people to come back in another episode. And I think it gets really weird if you put them up against, like, David or Mary Margaret or Belle, who looks like kind of quote unquote normal. And then they're very, like, in a wig, it just really stands out. So I don't know. I just wish that it was a little less cartoony, I think is my thing.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Now, when we meet Merida and her father early on, they're waiting to go into battle. This is one of the flashbacks that we get. And it's really nice seeing them bonding over this kind of shared experience, especially since Merida is a woman and a lot of people don't necessarily take her seriously. But she's there to fight and to be the warrior that her father knows that she can be. And I know this is kind of superficial, but I really liked her warrior garb. I thought that was really nice to see it. And just to see her interacting with her father in general, because of course we know that he dies and it's kind of tragic. But do you guys get this really nice sense of friendship and love between the two of them?
Oh, I definitely did for sure. I mean, I, you know, not again, having seen the movie, I really felt like everything with Merida's storyline the whole way through and the way it's developed has really made me want to go get Brave and go watch it versus I don't think I really had that feeling with the whole Frozen segment last year. So I would say yes, like I felt like they're very real people and I was very involved in what their story was all about. So yeah, it definitely got me interested.
Yeah, their bonding's just adorable. I mean, in the movie, Fergus and her get along so much better than her and her mother. So, you know, it's nice to see that a little bit of that here, even if it is, you know, preparing for battle and all that. Like, you do get to see her and her dad just a little bit, which is really, really nice.
And actually, I really enjoyed her relationship with her mother too, because even though there was like a little tenseness there, which we saw in the movie, you can tell like the stuff in the past has been fixed and they've got a better relationship now, and there's a little bit more trust between the two of them.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, like you can see that this is post movie. They've put that behind them and, you know, like they've her and her mother have definitely made strides in the right direction, which again is nice to see too.
And of course, Mulan quickly comes in as the soldier who's going to help Merida learn how to fight better. And this kind of snuck up on me a little bit, but right when she started kicking Merida's butt, I was like, yeah, it's gonna be Mulan. This is the best thing ever. And I just love that it's one woman teaching another woman how to fight. And in the end, they are both just so much better than all the guys on the field. And Mulan had this great way of calming Merida down in a way that was like, I know that you can, you know, kick every one of their butts, but you don't have to. It's not going to solve anything. And if you embarrass them, it's not going to make them want to follow you. So Mulan definitely gives her this, I don't know, the sense of like what real leadership is like. I mean, so does her father, but I think between the two of them, Merida learns very quickly what it means to be a leader, which is really nice to see.
Yeah, and I also thought it was really nice that her father thought it through enough to like call on Mulan's help. Like she wasn't just there by happenstance. Like he knew that he needed someone to kind of help Merida, and he found, you know, he went out and found Mulan to help. Like I think that was really, you know, really intelligent of him, not just because it's a girl teaching a girl, but it's someone who's faced exactly what Merida's going to face, you know, someone who's faced trying to lead a bunch of guys into battle, and why should they follow you? Like, it's a really, really, I thought it was a really sweet moment that not only is it Mulan teaching her, which is just awesome, but her dad also kind of like, and you know, he implemented the whole thing, like, he kind of constructed it for him.
Yeah, I mean, I really liked that he cared enough to get like the right kind of teacher. Like he just didn't get, oh, get the third guy from the left, you know? Like he really cared about who he got.
And speaking of Fergus, you know, he goes to the witch to what we assume in the beginning is to get this helmet that will essentially kind of convince people to follow him into battle. Before we learned the truth of that, how did you guys feel about him doing that? Because I did feel a little bit like, oh, Fergus, you know, he kind of seemed like the perfect guy, and it sucks that they did this to him, but I guess I can't really fault him because, you know, he was worried about being able to win the war and protect his family and his people. Of course, in the end, we know the truth, but when you first found out and when he first went to the witch's cabin, what did you guys think of that?
Yeah, it rubbed a little the wrong way. Like the witch had given us enough of an idea of, like, I'm trying to remember if we saw the scene with Merida before that one. I think we did, where she talks about like the stooping, like he never stoops or whatever. I think it was.
I think that was at the end. The witch said that at the end. Because that's when we found out that the whole thing with the helmet was a ruse, basically for Merida. Right.
Okay. Oh, I was trying to place it. I couldn't remember. But I mean, like, we know that Fergus isn't really, like, he's not the kind of guy that's out for his own glory. So if he's doing something, he's doing it to try and, like, protect other people. Mm-hmm. So if he's trying to get them to follow him, I would hope that it's because he knows that they'll fight better as a unit. Like, I was trying to justify why he would need this helm and why he would need people to follow him into battle. Like, his men clearly believe in him anyway, which we know now. But, you know, you assume that if he's going to this length, that there's some reason for it.
Yeah, and, like, for me, again, like, not having the movie background to go on all this, I was just, like, along for the ride. I was basically like, okay, this doesn't seem like a smart idea, but maybe this guy knows more than I do. Like, I was just, you know, very much along for the ride, wanting to know where all of this was going to go.
Right. Now, let's see, where am I? Okay, so this episode was a lot of snapshots, which is kind of why we're doing it rather than by story. We're doing it chronologically in terms of where it came in the show, which makes it feel like we're jumping around a lot, which is a little confusing, but in the end, it'll sort itself out. But the next thing I wanted to talk about was the fact that Merida needs help to find out information about the knight who killed her father. And she comes upon Mulan. Mulan is not the person that we saw before. She is so different. There's none of that honor that she used to have. She's basically a headhunter, and she's going around trying to collect taxes for people, and she's trying to just survive and be for herself. And this is what happened after having her heart broken by Aurora. And it's really tragic because Mulan has always been steadfast in her beliefs that honor comes before everything else. And it just goes to show you how far she's fallen since that moment.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. It's also, like, I don't think we have, like, a really clear idea of, like, how much time has passed, like, how long since, like, the wallowing has begun. So I think it's definitely, you know, an unexpected thing that we got to see. Like, that is very much not the Mulan that we were used to seeing.
And then, of course, they come upon Ruby. And Ruby's not exactly how we've seen her before. I mean, we have seen her as a wolf before, but she was basically the witch's guard dog, and the witch had her under control the entire time. And they figure out that it's her, turn her back, and she's sort of like, huh, you know, finally I'm free. But it was really nice to have her back. And Laura, I know you talked a little bit about this, the fact that they kind of, you know, she's been gone for so long, and they kind of wrote off where she's been. And I think it's unfortunate that they kind of had to do like, oh, she takes this bean all for herself, when the entire town probably could have used that bean at some point. Like, it would have been really useful,
right,
to have it around.
Oh my gosh, that. And it was like, let's pretend she was actually there in the season finale when she wasn't.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, I was like, oh my gosh.
But I will say that they were very clever in the way that they set it up. And
yes,
I think they did it the best way they could.
I would agree with that too. I mean, I like I said, obviously I very much would have liked Ruby to be far more of a bigger player than she has been the last couple seasons. I mean, I know she had a TV series, which unfortunately didn't take off, that she was in. And I just felt like I was so surprised they didn't know what to do with the character, and the fact that Megan Ori, who plays her, is such an amazing actress. So I was upset that they didn't use Ruby until now, but I'm excited that she was back for this. And I'm hoping this isn't just a see her and forget it episode, and maybe she's in two more and then that's the end of it. Like, I really hope we get more Ruby interaction, because I think she's such a fabulous character.
Definitely agree. I love Ruby, and it was nice to have her back. And I really hope, you know, I didn't exactly love her in the first season. Don't ask me why. I had my issues, but I, you know, I've grown to really like Red, and I want her around more often. So I'm with you on the hoping that this isn't just a temporary return for a handful of episodes. So cross our fingers.
Her previous show that I think she left once to go do Intelligence was canceled, wasn't it?
Yeah. It was canceled. I mean, unfortunately, it was one of those shows where like the first episode looked amazing and then it just tanked. And it was funny too, because it co-starred Josh Holloway, who's a big Lost guy. And as we all know, they keep casting former Lost actors in Once Upon a Time. So I was really hoping, oh my gosh, maybe Josh Holloway will show up now on Once Upon a Time. And alas, that has not happened yet.
Yeah, it could though.
I was going to say, give them time. They'll find a role.
Yeah. Well, looking at Megan Ory's IMDb, she's doing a couple of TV movies. As far as I can tell, that's really it. So I think it'd be interesting to kind of keep an eye on her and see if they can bring her back. I mean, contracts are always kind of hard to deal with, but yeah, there's a good possibility, I think, of her having time to fill out the role of Red. I mean, she was willing to come back for this episode, so you never know.
Yeah, and she also did, I mean, the other thing that she did too, like, obviously I would say there's no hard feelings with her and the showrunners, because back, if you guys remember this, not this year at Comic-Con, but last year at Comic-Con, they did this little like video sketch of, hey, these are how things are going on in the Enchanted Forest. And Ruby had like a little pop-up in the video. So clearly she still likes everybody there, seems willing to do stuff. So I don't know. I just really hope she's back a lot more than she has been.
Yeah. Now, jumping over to Camelot, because, of course, Zelina and Arthur hightailed it out of there and came back to Camelot to be safe from Emma and everybody else. And they want to get the helm as well, because that will make the people of Camelot follow Arthur and he can get done everything he wants to get done. So once again, he's basically cheating the system, and he's not the great king that he's meant to be. He's sort of just controlling everybody to make it seem that way, which is unfortunate, but, you know, I've said my piece about that before. What I'm really interested in is why Zelina keeps following him. I feel like she is so much more powerful, and she holds the upper hand, and it just makes me wonder if she can see something that we can't, and so she knows if she just stays on his good side, perhaps she'll find a way to come out on top.
Yeah, I think she foresees, like, I don't think she has any sort of, you know, special foresight, but I think she's got her eye on it. Like, I think sticking with him might be the best plan right now. Like, I don't have any other options. This seems like a good idea. I'll do it. Like, you know, she's one of those people, she goes with the flow and she changes her mind at the drop of a hat. So I don't think it's anything for her to try and stick with him for now. And if it doesn't go well, she'll just, you know, poof out of there or something.
Yeah. The thing that I keep having such a hard time with is the fact that we truly have evil King Arthur. Like, it is so, like, there's no trace of evil Arthur in Arthurian legend. Like, there's definitely stupid Arthur and Arthur who makes a dumb decision, but like, wah-ha-ha-ha, evil manipulative Arthur is not like really a thing. So I don't know, I'm having a hard time with like evil manipulative Arthur very much.
Yeah, and they continue to paint him as the bad guy. I mean, he's the one that killed Fergus. Now, right. Of course, Arthur, like, goes into battle all the time. He's going to end up killing lots of people, so it doesn't necessarily make him evil. But he killed Fergus to get the helmet, which he later found out was not the actual helmet, much to Merida's delight at that point. We'll get to that in a second. But, you know, once again, he's kind of behind that sword coming down on somebody else that we, or someone we care about, or someone that we care about cares about.
Right. I mean, the thing that I'm curious with, and maybe this, we can get into this at a later discussion point, but I'm seriously wondering if Arthur is part Dark One or something, because he just seems to act in a way that is very un-Arthur-like. So I'm curious if there's some sort of dark magic something going on with this.
Or maybe Arthur somehow isn't Arthur. Wouldn't be the first time.
That could be. I could totally see that. That would make a lot of sense to me.
Like someone's pulling a Xelena and is wearing an Arthur suit, and he's actually, hanging out somewhere in a dungeon or God knows where. But it could be a possibility.
Yeah, that would work for me.
I like that wearing an Arthur suit. It reminds me of Doctor Who. Those creepy things that like zip themselves up. I can just see that
This
happening.
Levine, he's really a
Yeah.
Sim Levine. He's gonna fart on cue.
God. Okay, this just went to a place. But yeah, the thing about Arthur, like, I don't know if he can actually technically become a dark one without, let's see, how did. Okay, so there were only two technically dark ones or people with those powers. We had Merlin, and we had like the actual dark one who like changed over time. I think the only way for him to become a dark one would be to transfer that power, and clearly that hasn't happened. So I don't think he's actually the dark one, but I would really enjoy the idea of him being somebody else. Somebody's wearing an Arthur suit, or he's being controlled or something. Because every time I think of Arthur, I just think of this, like, almost too good for this world type of ruler, somebody who is really naive and pure. And the fact that he's turning out this way is crazy.
I mean, I was just kind of trying to play through scenarios in my head and like maybe someone's got his heart. Like there's always that possibility that someone had can't even place who. Like I'm trying to think of who could possibly have had the magic to rip his heart out and is, using him like a puppet. That's also a possibility.
So it turns out that Merida and Mulan have quite the history. I mean, not just the fact that Mulan trained Merida, but Mulan was also the one keeping her from really going after the person that killed her father. And I think that's really interesting that they have such a dynamic like that, and they have, these multiple instances of coming together, helping each other, distracting each other, and kind of being at odds with each other too. I mean, it explains at the top of the episode why they were acting the way that they were. But this is something really interesting, and I'm gonna bring this up because I'm interested in it, but I also have a feeling a lot of other people are, considering that we know Mulan is at the very least bisexual. I mean, I don't know for sure. We know that she had a thing for Aurora. And of course, whenever Brave came out, everyone was like, oh, Merida isn't interested in guys. Like, she doesn't have a prince to save her. She could be like the first lesbian princess and stuff like that. So I'm really curious whether they're going to take their relationship in that direction because they have so much in common and they've kind of been, around each other for quite a while and keep coming back, apparently. But I really want to see Mulan happy. I don't like her with her heart broken.
Well, the other possibility also is Red, because I felt like, I don't know, there was the whole thing about I need to find my tribe and I don't fit in. And I thought, I wonder if that maybe is, code for them developing something else down there too, if you take into account a character who's maybe bisexual. And then the same thing for me with Mulan also, because for correct me if I'm wrong, but like when we first met Mulan, wasn't she originally sort of, I got the vibe that she was originally pining over Philip. So I'm wondering, like they were palling around together, they were fighting together, and then afterwards she met Aurora. I'm just kind of wondering if, I don't know, like this, I feel like this could work out any given way, is I guess what I'm saying.
Maybe the three of them should just get together and
I'm pretty
hang
sure,
out.
as liberal as ABC is, they're not going for a lesbian threesome. I'm pretty sure that's not in the cards.
Mean, free yourself. Do whatever makes you happy. I am seriously wondering, though, if they will end up going down that road for Merida in particular, just because of everything that was swirling around the movie and her character from the Disney movie. If ABC / Once Upon a Time, I mean, I don't really know where that directive would come from. If it had to be, I mean, I'm sure it has to be approved by like Disney itself, but if they would be brave, enough to kind of go down that road and be like, yeah, well, you know, this is a thing. Doesn't necessarily mean it was a thing in the movie, but we can make it a thing for Once Upon a Time.
Yeah, I'm curious, because as a network, I would say ABC certainly has enough. Like, I don't feel like they're a homophobic network by any means. I mean, if you, you know, take a look at How to Get Away with Murder, that's an ABC product. And, you know, ABC is still owned by Disney. Like, a lot of their shows are very, you know, shows that you couldn't have had on TV, you know, 7 years ago. They're absolutely out there. But you're right. It's very, Once Upon a Time is very what you would call conservative family television as a generality. So will they go that route? That's a really good question.
I mean, with the hints of Mulan being, you know, attracted to Aurora, and Modern Family is just as much family programming as this show is. Like, that show is directed to be family fun. Like, so I can't imagine that they wouldn't do it. It's just a matter of if Merida is the character they want to use, like the character that
right.
they think it's right for. I don't know if I mean, red is definitely a possibility for Mulan too, especially since they're heading off on their own and Merida's kind of being left behind. Maybe that's a way they're going to take the story. But, you know, I'm with you. I want to see Mulan happy. So I don't really care.
She's kind of terrifying when she's like heartbroken.
Heartbroken?
Like,
yeah.
She's very cold, and it's, yeah. I mean, she was kind of cold to begin with because she's very strategic. And she is a warrior, and she's kind of single-minded in that mindset. But then when you take away, you know, any sort of sense of honor, she is quite terrifying.
Yeah, most definitely.
All right, so let's talk about the last major point of this episode, which was the fact that the witch never enchanted the helm at all. It was a ruse from the beginning by Fergus to kind of see what kind of person Merida was, and to have her figure out a way to get the other clans to follow her anyway, which was kind of genius, but also kind of underhanded. But like I said before, really happy that Fergus didn't end up going down that road, and also very happy that the witch was not the evil witch that she could have very easily been.
Yeah, I loved that last scene, like, in the hall with everybody, and the witch comes in, and it's not to be, like, you know, get the last laugh or anything. It's just to spread good news and to be like, listen, yeah, it was a test, and you passed, and, you know, like, it was just a really, really beautiful moment, and I was totally on board with it. Plus, the whole, she got to see her dad thing, like,
just, oh, yeah. We can't forget about that. I mean, that was pretty special. And what was interesting, we can talk about her and Fergus meeting again after his death in a second, but there was plenty of water in that thing. And I'm just wondering, you know, is there going to be another way that somebody else can come back for a little bit? Or, you know, we've got this 100th episode coming up soon, and they've kind of planted the seed for this, and who knows what the heck's going to happen.
I can almost feel people going, Neil. Neil.
Yeah.
Neil. Like, we just
oh
want to
gosh,
see him.
Seriously.
Like, it wouldn't bring him back.
Ghostly Neil comes back or something. Yes, I know exactly what you mean.
Like, it wouldn't bring him back, but it would be an opportunity to talk to him and for Emma to see him and Henry to see him again. Like, yeah, I can hear people just, like, chanting it already.
And before anyone gets too excited, Kristen and I have looked into, you know, the possibility of the Huntsman coming back, and it seems to still be quite a strong rumor at this point. So I don't think we'd be seeing him anytime soon. Either.
I don't think so. I mean, he's filming the next two 50 Shades of Grey movies back to back. He's going to be very busy and very naked for quite some time.
And I'm pretty sure it was Adam or Eddie, one of them, did an interview. I think it was E! Online that I checked it out. And he said, "Don't hold your breath," like for him or Sebastian Stan, because both of them are very much in demand and are very busy men. As much as I know they would love to have either one or both of them back, especially with where they're going toward the 100th episode, it sound good, so.
Yeah, I mean, they're, just on a very practical economic level, their price points have significantly risen since, their days on the show.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Didn't even think about that, but yeah,
I
definitely.
right. Anything else from this episode that we'd like to discuss before we talk about clearly the most important part of this episode of the podcast?
No, I guess the only thing I was going to say is just because it related a little bit to Arthur is, and this was, kind of in the episode before where, we realize that Hook is, a dark one, and I had been kind of this whole season been saying, "Guy, what the heck is wrong with Hook? Does anybody realize like how emo Hook is being? Like this doesn't seem like him," and clearly. Yeah, that's what was causing it. And I'm just wondering if, because of that, if that's like the sign of something being in Arthur. That's the only tie-in I made to meant to make, and I didn't make it before, but that was it.
Yeah. Well, when we were watching and they hadn't shown us who had killed Fergus, my first inclination was Lancelot because we haven't seen him. Like, they made this big deal about him being back and Snow, like, keeping it a secret, and he hasn't done anything. So I'm like, why did we have all of this Lancelot drama at the beginning of the season and have nothing come of it? Like, and he's not in Storybrooke that we've seen. So what happened to Lancelot? Like, where is he? What's going on? Like, why is he important? I'm hoping that it's not just a dropped plot line or a dropped story. Like, I'm hoping that he comes into play here and we figure out that, like, I don't know, he is manipulating Arthur or he
No.
has been doing so. I'm not saying it's great, but I just want something. I want this to have not just been a, hey, he showed up because we wanted Lancelot because we're in Camelot and now he's gone.
I think I'd rather him like drop off the face of the planet than be evil.
Just don't like dropped plot lines.
I know. No, and I think that's a fair point. You're right. He did show up and it was this big deal, and then poof, where has he been? You know, it just makes me wonder if he's going to be more important later on. And so they're kind of saving any more looks at him until that moment.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of time, especially since this whole season is going to be kind of the same story. It's not two separate stories. So there's a lot of time for him to be, you know, integral to the plot, but it's just bugging me because I don't have answers yet.
Yes, I agree. Okay, so let's talk about the most important moment of my life.
Guys, she was so excited.
I fell down on the floor and I cried. I
Yes.
legitimately had tears coming out of my eyes. I was so happy because Hercules and Megara are coming to Once Upon a Time.
Like, I wish I could have gotten it on video so that you guys could have seen it. I didn't, and Karen is very happy about that. But it was incredibly dramatic, and I think we're all excited to see them. They're not exactly like Disney doesn't like celebrate its portrayal of Hercules all that much, so I'm really, really excited to see them on Once Upon a Time.
Yeah, and I hope that we get like a continued arc, although right now they're both only set for one episode, which is really unfortunate. But I think this is also kind of a confirmation that the distinguished gentleman is going to be Hades. I mean, even the guy who was cast looks like Hades. It's really weird. And Brittany wrote a fantastic article and put little blue flames on his head for me because she loves me and I love her. And
Ha
It was great. But first, let's talk about the fact that Hercules is being described as a dashing, strapping young man who is single-minded in his pursuit of his destiny to be the greatest hero who ever lived. All that changes, however, when he falls in love with a beautiful princess. And he will be played by, is it Jonathan Whitesell, who I don't know, but find kind of attractive. He's over 18, I checked. But he definitely looks.
She did.
The ogle permission has now officially been granted.
He's got really nice cheekbones and freckles. I can't help it. But he looks like a good Hercules, quite a young Hercules, and not as big as you would imagine Hercules to look, but it kind of seems like they're going like almost teenager route with them, so it'll be interesting. He's not done a whole lot prior to this, although apparently he was on like an episode of The 100, and he was on something else too. I don't remember, but he's pretty big newcomer. But then we have Casey Rohl, who has been on Hannibal, who'll be playing Meg. And Meg is a plucky young adventurer with a sly sense of humor and a tough, no-nonsense spirit. And though she has spent a long time languishing in a dungeon, her inner spark has not burned out. Rather, it is waiting for the right opportunity to shine brightly again. And I just love that they're calling her plucky and that she's no-nonsense and tough and she's got a sly sense of humor because that is Meg in a nutshell. She just is very sassy. And if they didn't bring that to the character, I would be quite disappointed.
Yeah, and Casey Rohl, like, I've never seen Hannibal, so I have no idea of her acting abilities, but she looks like Meg. She's got these big blue eyes. Her hair, I think, is not going to be an issue to, have the whole Meg stylish thing going on. Like, when I looked at the pictures of who they had for Hercules and Meg, I was like, well, they nailed Meg for sure.
Yeah, definitely. And speaking of Hades as well, Greg German is the guy who was cast as him. And he's got this definite, like, long face, and he just looks like he could play a bad guy wherever he's from. But they will not be joining us until the second half of the season. Season 5, episode 13, Labor of Love, like the 12 Labors of Hercules, is when Hercules and Meg will show up. Like I said, only for one episode right now. But the distinguished gentleman, I think, will have a bigger arc, which makes sense because I think he's going to be tied into like the underworld and stuff like that. And we were talking about the possibility of, if Hook is really dead, like how he could come back and that sort of thing. And Hades could definitely be a part of that.
And we also like kind of figured out, I think it's episode 11 is the 100th, right? So this will come after the 100th episode, where we already know that there's a lot of craziness happening in the 100th with everybody from Cruella to Robbie Kay is coming back, and like there's a whole bunch of people that are going to be in the 100th. So I was really glad to know that this was a little bit past, so they'll get a chance to really give the storyline its due.
Yeah, I feel like it's going to be a Wizard of Ozzy kind of episode with the and you and you and you and you were there. Like,
Yeah, really.
Yeah. But I please tell me if you guys are as excited as I am about this Hercules thing, because I mean, it's one thing I think for Hades and Hercules to be in there, but the fact that they threw Meg in there as well is just wonderful. It makes my heart happy. And yeah, I need to know that there are other Hercules fans out there.
I was definitely really surprised. Like they've been playing with the whole Greek mythology thing for a while, and Hercules and Hades are both characters in Greek mythology, but Meg is a Disney construct. Like she was something they created in the movie, and so it's like I was really surprised but really excited to see her in it too.
Were you going to say something, Laura?
I was sorry, I was on mute there. I forgot to take my mute button off. I like Hercules. I just It's not my favorite movie ever. I honestly, I think I've only seen it the one time I actually saw it in theaters. But I feel like it probably isn't a fair comparison because it came out like right after, I want to say The Lion King was like the movie that, like the big Disney movie that just preceded it, like right before it, like in a row was Little Mermaid and then Beauty and the Beast. And then Aladdin, and then The Lion King, and it's not a knock against Hercules, but those are like very huge, huge, big, big, big Disney movies, and I just don't think Hercules is kind of on the same level. So I think when I saw it in theaters, I was just like a little disappointed, and I've never really seen it again. I know Karen and I probably can no longer be friends now.
Yeah, I was gonna say if you make it through this without being fired, you'll be very
It's
lucky.
a good thing I'm 500 miles away right now. But yeah, I guess I just didn't like it as much, you know. I mean, and there's others that I liked. Like I really liked Pocahontas a lot. I liked Mulan, I loved. I don't know. I didn't have the same love for Hercules. And I wanted to like it and I just didn't.
Maybe you should watch it again, Laura, and fall in love with it. Or else
You
you
should
might
watch
find
it.
yourself out of
Oh
a
dear.
job.
You should watch together like next year at SDCC. Like we should the first night, like make everybody sit down and watch Hercules
Oh
with
my
Karen
gosh, I have
because
this vision of being tied up and being made to watch Hercules again. Oh my gosh.
Now, I will say, I am a huge fan of Greek mythology. I am a huge fan of Hercules. Those two things are very separate because the movie does not follow actual Greek mythology in the slightest. It's a really terrible interpretation of it, but it's appropriate for kids, which I think is fair. And I really like the music, and I think Meg is so sassy, which is why I like her. And she actually is part of actual Greek mythology, but her story is a lot more tragic and very, very different from what they showed in the movie. So I'm interested to
Oh.
know. Yeah, I'm interested to know how they'll take it, but I have a feeling they're going to be a lot closer to the movie than actual Greek mythology because Hercules like went crazy and killed her and his children with her, and yeah, it was terrible.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, that's definitely news to me. Like I had never heard of that. So that's really cool. Like I didn't
She's
realize
definitely
Meg
not
was
someone who comes up a lot in mythology. I think Hercules tends to get his own sort of like, these are his 12 labors, and everything that happens after that and stuff is just no big deal. All right, well, we have just one piece of feedback this week, and this comes from Lucas. And he asks, did you girls notice that Red wasn't surprised to see Wicked? I think he means Xelena again. Like, she left after they kill her, and it was all fine to see her. I hadn't noticed, actually. I hadn't noticed her reaction at all that, like, Xelena was around. But, like I said, I think they kind of had to fit Ruby into this puzzle that was kind of already complete, and to kind of stick her in there the way they did was really tricky, and I think they did it as well as they possibly could.
Yeah, I think it's exactly what you said. Like, we have to sort of assume that Ruby has this additional knowledge because apparently she was bumbling around Storybrooke through major crises and they didn't ask her to help for reasons unknown. So, yeah, no, I agree. Giant, big, gaping pothole. Yes, bothers me because I'm a Ruby fangirl, but I hear where he's coming from. But I agree, Karen, you explained it exactly how I think it's meant to be understood.
So, we have two more episodes. We have one coming back November 29th, which will be called Broken Heart, and then another one December 6th called Swan Song, and then that's it for the first half of season 5 of Once Upon a Time. We'll return again in March, which feels like ages and ages away, but it's actually only a couple of months. So, it'll be good to have a nice break and then to gear up again for the back half of the season. So, hopefully, it goes out with a bang, and these last two episodes are really great, and I have a feeling they will be because this arc for everybody so far this season has been really good. Kind of tragic, but good. Good tragedy, if there's such a thing. Until next time, I'm Karen.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Laura.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye.